Critical Web Accessibility Tips. Greetings and happy holidays. This is WebX Podcast 37. Code considerations for web accessibility, and our year-ending Christmas holiday podcast, whatever you want to call it.
Yep, happy holidays, everybody.
Thanks for the bells, Ross.
My pleasure. Glad to help.
This is your host, Dennis, and that's Ross Johnson, my co-host.
We've got some news for today.
Yeah, before we get into the code considerations for web accessibility, we got some news and announcements and a couple other things to talk about. But hang in there. This should be a promising podcast episode.
To start, you might have noticed that Microsoft has redesigned their homepage, and they're actually now using CSS. Woohoo!
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even notice until Ross told me how they updated it, which goes to show how often I visit Microsoft. So.
Yeah, but I think I read about it on Dig. It's,
oh, really?
It didn't happen by accident, you know. But
so, does it have minus digs or? The article has plus digs, I suppose, but
yeah.
The site. Yeah, I guess it looks pretty consistent with what they're doing. I noticed right away, though, how like there's not really any content except for until you go like below the fold of the page.
Yeah, I mean it's a nicely designed visually site, but I mean it's like you go to the site and they're trying to sell you three things: Zune, Vista, and Office. And
yeah, that's the only thing above the fold, and then a menu and a search box.
Yeah, and the first thing I notice, I scroll down, what do I see? December security updates, so it's like they're up to their old tricks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well, I mean,
at least they're slowly moving in the right direction, but like you said, it's not even XHTML transitional. It's just, what is it, HTML 4.01?
I mean, they moved from tables, which is good, but they're putting all that effort into it. Why not, you know, at least make it XHTML or...
Yeah, if you're going to make, yeah, exactly, a huge effort like that, just might as well do it all at the same time, make it XHTML.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole Internet Explorer thing. Oh, they made a big step, but fell short. But...
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I wanted to rant about Microsoft a little bit. I've updated some updates on Windows, and... It says, do you want to restart now? I'm like, no, I want to restart later. But then that thing keeps popping up, like, every 10 minutes. So if anyone out there knows how to, like, turn that off so it doesn't keep popping up, that would be good.
Yeah, those are annoying. I don't have auto-update on because, yeah, it'll kind of download and install it by itself. And I'll be like, oh, now I got to restart. Great.
Well, you can have it download and then ask you
how
to actually install it. So.
I mean, that's my problem.
Oh, did you hear about... So Vista's coming out soon. Did you hear about... I think it was Paul Boag that was talking about how they've added, like, too many features when you shut down. Like, they've added, like, three or four. There's, like, seven options altogether now, like...
Really?
When you shut down. Yeah, when you go to shut down your computer.
All right. How complicated can we make it?
You go to start, shut down, and then there's, like, options, like... Well, start, shut down obviously doesn't even make any sense to begin with. But then when you go to shut it down, there's, like, options that don't even shut down. It's like, you know, I guess you're going to be able to switch between users now and and all this other stuff. And
visual.
So anyways, okay, well, speaking of Paul Boag, I just wanted to say not Happy Christmas, but in the States here we say Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And then well, sometimes in cards we say season's greetings, but usually, like, we'll say happy holidays.
Oh, yeah, that's a little formal for us.
To be more politically correct, we say happy holidays.
Yeah. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Paul just had his Christmas episode, which was quite funny, but...
Yeah, it was a good episode. I really liked
it.
Yeah.
They say some weird things over there.
And, you know, I did put out... My wife was bugging me. I did put out some Christmas lights out front. But I think that's a great American tradition. Like, a lot of neighborhoods or houses have just, like, tons of lights outside. And when it's nighttime, it looks really cool.
Yeah, I think if done well, it looks great. And that's another thing that Paul and Marcus said that they didn't like on their show. But, I mean, if you go downtown Ann Arbor, where we live, they've got some great lights, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the neighborhood I'm in, it's like, some people don't have any lights, but some people like them. All right, so Merry Christmas, Paul Boag and everybody else.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays. And our next podcast will probably be after the first of the year, but I might be posting a couple of news things on the site. So stay tuned to webax.blogspot.com. Next news item is screen reader emulator for the Firefox extension was recently updated for Firefox 1.5. So, it took a while to come out, but it's out now. So, if you want a neat tool that it basically gives you a textual version of what a screen reader would say if it came to the website that you're testing. So, it's a pretty neat plugin if you want to check that out.
Yeah, it's really helpful. So, if you have a page as opposed to just taking out the style sheet, it'll read out like bulleted list. 5 items, and then the bulleted list, kind of like a screen reader would read off to you.
Yeah, and the BBC has come out with a neat article, and there's a video on the web that you could watch of it. It's about web accessibility, of course, and but it's pretty neat. It takes a real personal aspect on how difficult websites can be, and I think they even use Amazon as an example, and how like a blind user like has so much trouble just ordering a book. It takes one person like 5 minutes, and another person half an hour, an hour or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's a really, really good video. You should check it out. Yeah, they go side, well, not side by side, but they kind of have a comparison, and it shows you how little changes and decisions can make it so hard for a blind user.
Yeah, and you can find links to that on this podcast blog entry. All right, so a couple announcements. The next Refresh Detroit meeting will be actually at the offices at Ross's office for 3.7 Designs in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Wednesday, January 24th.
Yep, come on by. I think we're going to order pizza and have drinks and stuff because parking probably won't be free. So that'll hopefully balance it all out.
Yeah, well, there's a chance you could find a parking spot on the street or something, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. So if you're interested... What, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a big garage, like, right by you, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you're interested, I'll put up directions shortly on the Refresh Detroit site, and you can see that at refresh-detroit.org.
Yeah, and there's a post there now, but maybe a map, but we'll have more directions and parking information. So if you're anywhere in the Detroit, Ann Arbor area, come on by. I'm actually going to be giving a presentation on web accessibility, so
yep.
It should be fun. Let's see. Looks like we've covered the other things in the notes here, so let's move on. Today's podcast is... kind of in follow-up to podcast 34, design considerations for accessibility. So today we're going to be doing code considerations.
And to start off, you want to use XHTML for content, CSS for style and for presentation, and then DOM scripting for behavior.
Exactly. And I guess it's a new term. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Ross. I just became familiar with it lately. I guess they're calling this progressive enhancement.
Yeah.
It's basically the term they're describing for separating the content style and behavior, as far
yeah.
as I understand it.
It's kind of, a lot of people are talking about it now, and my understanding is that it works in kind of the most basic form, but as you get more technology, more modern browsers, it kind of enhances itself a little bit. Kind of one example that I could think of is I did a site where on Internet Explorer, it was a fixed width site if you didn't have JavaScript. But if you had JavaScript, then it would kind of had a min-max script, you know, so that it supported max width, and it would load a different style sheet and allow it to stretch. So that way it still worked and was readable if you didn't have JavaScript and you had, you know, 800 by 600 resolution, but if you had better monitors, it worked a little better.
Yeah, I guess there's, you know, there's a little bit of debate, I think, still going on as far as some of the JavaScript or DOM scripting for behavior and CSS. Like, some people like to put, like, say, a good example is a mouse over. You know, should mouse over, well, not maybe not a mouse over, but, you know, a hover or a mouse over, like, say, on a button.
Right? Yeah.
To change a button state or something, like, that could easily be done in CSS, and I think most people do that way, but some, like, DOM, total DOM advocates say that, well, that's really a behavior that should be done in the DOM scripting, but...
Yeah, and I can kind of see both sides. It is a
yeah.
behavior, but that's a lot of additional work and additional code.
Yeah, it seems like, just for that particular example, it's a lot of work and code for a simple thing, so...
Yeah, huh.
I'm pretty much sticking with CSS for that, at least right now.
Yeah, that'll be interesting as CSS grows, where that line will be drawn.
Yeah, and it'll probably always be somewhat of a gray area, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. So what are the accessibility reasons of separating your content style and behavior? Basically, the behavior has to do with, your behavior of your site and DOM scripting really should be adding to the functionality of your site and enhancing it. That way, if the person doesn't have JavaScript enabled on their browser, that they still get all the content, but just not all the extra, bells and whistles. Now, as far as the, separating the HTML content and CSS, I mean, we've talked about that before. It's pretty basic. If the user doesn't have CSS enabled using a text browser or whatever, they could still get all the content, just not some of the styling, the extra styling, but we'll still have access to the content, which is the main idea.
Yeah, basically, if you're doing good XHTML coding for your content, I mean, it's pretty hard to find a situation where, one way or another, you can't access that content, whether it's, disabling style sheets or printing it out, that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Some coding tips for coding for screen readers. Well, basically, when you do your code, you should always make your content in a logical... The order of your content should just be logical from top to bottom. Like the main header first, the heading 2 and some content, and your footer at the bottom of the code. And that's the main idea. And then if you want to reposition those elements on the page, then you use CSS. So if you turn off the CSS... the content is still arranged in a manner that's easy to read.
Yeah, so how I usually do it is I'll have my skip links at top, and I'll have two. I'll have skip to content and skip to navigation, because what I'll do is below that there'll be the page information, which is like the page header, brief description of the page, and then I'll have the content itself. So kind of, if it's being read by a screen reader, you have the option to skip to navigation if you don't think it's the page you want, and then it goes right to the content and can read through the content. And once it goes through the content and the subcontent, then there's the navigation in the code. So after you've kind of read through everything and you've decided in the beginning you didn't want to skip to the navigation, then you can navigate.
Then do you put your footer after the navigation then?
Yeah, I'll put the footer right at the bottom, because usually that's just, copyright or web design by 3.7
yeah.
or whatever.
Okay, so in your skip to links at the very beginning, you have a skip to navigation.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that method too. That's usually not how I do it. Mine is similar, but one big difference is I usually put the navigation first. So I have the skip links, page information, the header and stuff, then the navigation, then the main page content, then the subcontent, then the footer. And in my skip to links, I'll say, instead of skip to nav, I say skip to the page content or skip to the subcontent. That way the user, if they don't hit those, then it goes straight to the page information. So it's two different methods doing pretty much the same thing, just two different ways to approach it, and I think they both work.
Yeah, I think if you're really stumped on it, then do a few screen reader testings with some people and see what works for them.
Right. All right. And that kind of has to do with the code order, which was the next subject that we had written here.
Yeah. So basically the idea is that you can have your code ordered in a way where if it's being read, the content top to bottom, it makes sense. And then you CSS, you can position elements differently. And this gets pretty tricky once you start using columns. Because usually, like for a three-column layout, it's easiest to have, you've got like your header and you've got like a container, and then you've got the left column first in the code, then the center column second, and then the right column third, and you float them all to one direction. But most people don't have their main content in the left column. So a list apart came up with an article, and their solution is they have, they use negative margins to kind of pull the outer columns into place, and they've got a container div that has padding for left and right padding equal to the width of the two columns. The left column is given a right positioning of its width and then a margin left of negative 100%, which pulls that column to the left, and then the right column has a margin right of its width in negative, so if the right column was 300 pixels, it'd be negative 300 pixels. And then they're all relatively positioned flowed left, and basically those negative margins pull the two outer columns to the right and to the left, and the center column is left there, and that actually appears first in code.
Tricky.
Yeah. And so there's kind of some debate whether that's the best way to do it, because it's kind of using negative margins, and it's kind of hacky, but it appears to work for the most part.
Yeah, it sounds like, the negative margins are kind of scary.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, you know, in the future there'll be some enhancements of that code or whatever. But, I mean, there's other sites, and I'll put a couple links on the post, you know, that have some basic templates for column layouts. There's a site, glish.com, that has some good CSS layout templates, and you can go to glish.com/css-index.html. So yeah, or just go to a list apart.
Yeah.
And check that out and other ideas.
Yeah, I think you can probably also, if you've got a fixed width site, you could probably use absolute positioning to put stuff in places too. But kind of the general idea is, if possible, try and order your code the way that the content is should be read.
Right. And another coding issue is for form development and layout. Now, if you're going to go XHTML and not use tables for layout, which I hope you're doing by now, there's an issue now for formatting forms and the labels. Because usually, the label is on the left and the form element is on the right, and it's nicely lined up and everything, and that's real easy to do with tables, but it's something kind of new and a little bit tricky at first to do with CSS. And I think, actually, I should look up a podcast I've done on this previously, but basically there's a little debate on how you should do that, if you should use what your container elements should be. So should you use divs or paragraphs or lists? I've seen more people using lists lately, which just kind of bothers me because it's not really semantically correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a couple of experts have even said that that's pretty much stretching it, you know, and I agree with that, that you're stretching the... It's not really, you know, semantically correct anymore, because a form element, you know, to me, like, isn't a list of items, so...
Yeah, it's not a list of items you have to go through and edit or anything, so... Yeah, I don't know.
I usually use divs for my container element. I mean, do you know, what do you usually do?
Yeah, usually divs or spans. I don't use paragraphs because they're really not paragraphs and they're not lists, so... I know, it's kind of a gray area. I use either a div or a span, and I'm not totally happy with that method, but...
But, you know, if... A good way to... Well, yeah. If you're using divs, I just think that works best, because you got your label, you know, element to work with, and you're, you know, and then you have the input element, of course. But, I don't know, I think some people, maybe they're using lists because it helps them grab all the elements inside or order it better or something like that. But, I mean, if you're using the label tag, that gives you an extra container to work with, so...
Yeah, and there's definitely ways to do it. Maybe lists are just easier, or there's one tutorial out there that a lot of people are following, but...
Yeah.
It seems like you can do it better ways.
All right, so we've kind of mentioned semantics during this podcast, but that... That really is an important coding aspect of coding for standards and accessibility. And I guess the most popular ones would be, you know, make sure that you're using the correct headings, you know, your H1, H2 tags for your headings. You're coding the lists as lists, you know, your paragraphs correctly and block quotes. And that you're only using tables for data tables and doing that correctly.
Yeah, and I mean... Go out there and print off a list of, you know, semantic tags, because there's a ton of them out there that, you know, I often forget about, that'll describe information like I think I was looking at one of your sites, and I noticed there's an address tag, and I completely forgot that there's an address tag.
Yeah, I was using that in the footer, the address tag, and I guess there's some debate about that in itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's been some blogging going on about that, and I think it might be going away, actually, because it's confusing, nobody uses it, and...
Yeah.
I don't know, it just...
Maybe they're switching to micro formats or something.
I don't really know. All I know is it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it seems to me like a good idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Well, we'll put a link or a post up about that soon because I was thinking about doing that. But if you're not aware of the address tag, it doesn't mean a physical address of a place.
Oh.
It means, like, kind of like what's in the footer, like, you know, the copyright or whodunit kind of information.
Gotcha.
As far as I could gather. Anyways, so semantics. Semantic coding, do it. And why for accessibility? Because, one thing, you're using standards, so you could take advantage of all the stuff that Web Standards gives you, but specifically for accessibility, I mean... It makes it more, your code more, well, it makes the page and layout more readable for screen readers. You know, obviously that's a huge advantage there because the screen reader can use tools to grab the different information.
Yeah, I mean, kind of the way the web's going is we're getting all our content so that it's coded in a way that the content is described by the HTML. Eventually we're going to have applications that can kind of, in the XML sort of way, suck out the content specifically. And use that for other information. We're already looking at that with microformats, where you can take, you know, I believe it's called, is it called a V card for your address?
Yeah, I think
so. Or an H card or something? Yeah, there's, you have a card which is basically your contact information. There's programs that can see that on a website, and it can kind of make a entry in your address book just by seeing how that information is described semantically.
That's right, and, yeah, if your code is semantic, then, I mean, with web standards and everything, you know, it's for accessibility, I mean, that makes it easier to get at the content from different devices and different kinds of browsers and all that stuff. So, and as search engine optimization, SEO, it helps with that too.
Yep.
All right, scalability, code considerations.
If you can make your site scale, particularly with larger fonts, because people who have low vision might want to increase the font size, you don't want your site to break too easily. And you can do that by, when you design with width, use M's rather than pixels. And basically...
Or percentages.
Yeah, or percentages. Fluid layout is going to... You'll probably be able to resize that pretty well before it breaks. And basically an M is it's the width of one M character in the alphabet. So the idea is that as you increase the font size, everything else increases also.
Yeah, it's relative sizing for your text. So if you use percentages or M's to size your text in your CSS, then it'll increase or decrease gracefully.
Yep.
And then for your layout, the fixed width layout that a lot of people, most people use, myself included, but for sites that really need, you know, to be 100% accessible, Section 508 compliant or what have you, fluid layout is really better. So you're actually designing the width of your site with percentages or M's, so that when you increase the size, the width of the layout actually increases or decreases also.
Yeah.
So, like Russ said, you want to figure out early on, obviously, if you want to go that way or not.
Yeah, it can be kind of tricky, especially with M's. Like if you're trying to set a certain height for like a header or something, but you don't know how big to make it. I guess there's a formula out there to figure out approximately how many M's will equal how many pixels at what font size. But I just do trial and error.
Yeah, I mean, and like if you're using graphics, you know, like you got to. Just make the actual graphic, make your image the same size, but the graphic itself can be larger you know, so if the size of your site increases, then the image in the graphic stays the same, but the background, like, image, like, in the graphic, like, still shows.
Yeah, so maybe you see more of see, the person.
Yeah, graphic so you'll see more of the background or whatever the graphic, but the image will pretty much stay the same. The image inside the graphic. But that kind of takes us to the graphic considerations of scalability, which is the main reason, I think, why people started using CSS and lists, you know, for menus instead of graphics, because if you increase the size of the text or, you know, of your website, you know, the graphics aren't going to stretch. Your graphics are going to be the same size. So if you're using graphical buttons, those are going to stay the same size, so it's not going to help the user to read them if their graphics and they stay the same size. But if the user is using the actual screen magnification and magnifying the screen rather than the sizing, then I mean that works a little better, but still your graphics are going to be
They'll get pixelated.
Pixelated, yeah, thanks. They're going to be pixelated and everything. So be careful what you use graphics for.
If you use icons or graphics instead of navigations or headers, it has some accessibility problems.
Yeah, and I guess my point was if you magnify the screen or the size of the site and stuff, like the clarity of your graphics, you know, you got to be aware that those might not be 100%. So.
Oh, yeah. They get blurry and kind of start creating their own problems.
All right. Code considerations for navigation. We kind of spoke about the layout, and Ross and I, our ideas for skip navs and everything.
Kind of skip the content, skip the side content, skip the navigation, I've seen skip the search.
Yeah, and if you're not aware of what this is all about, there's a WebAx podcast on this also, so check it out. But basically, you're putting hyperlinks at the very beginning of your HTML document, so when the user just traditionally or with the screen reader or tabbing, they're going to hit these skip nav links first. And so if there's a whole bunch of navigation elements or like content, but they want to skip it, they could just click those links and shoot to like a different part of that page right away. So they could skip to the main content or go to the navigation or the side content. Okay, we've covered use lists for navigation. Just some other last minor tips. Use access keys. Numbers for access keys seem to be the best resolution, at least right now.
Actually, I was going to put this in the news, but I guess Firefox 2 breaks numbers for access keys.
It does?
Yes, now with Firefox 2 you have to use the shift key, and when you use numeric, somehow that creates a problem. I guess it uses something else. Oh, if you do shift 3, it like the different numbers will cycle you through the tab.
Okay, so that's it for WebAx Podcast 37, Code Considerations for Accessibility.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and season's greetings, or happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all that.
Absolutely. Stop by the site, leave us a comment, or shoot us an email, and we'll be back.
Yep. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Jingle bells, bells, bells. The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com. webaxe.blogspot.com. Email webaxe@webaxe@gmail.com. webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.